The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. And we've done it. England have finally won on ITV. To be serious for a second, for the second time in history, England are in the final of a major tournament. For the first time, England are in the final of the European Championships. The final, the last two teams, England are one of them. If they win one football match, they get a real trophy, not the Nations League, a trophy that matters. And they deserved it, probably. Gareth Southgate, brave decisions again, Grealish on, Grealish off, keeping the ball. Why does Harry Kane drop deep to thread beautiful through balls through the lines? And after all that, was it a penalty? Are we going to be biased because it's England? I am. But I'm sure some on the panel will bring balance. Denmark scared us more than any other side in the competition. Damsgaard's free kick, an absolute beauty. But England are through, and I am really, really pleased about it. This is The Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Marcus Bean. Hello.
Hi, Max.
Welcome to my house.
I've had a great time, yeah.
Hello, Lars Siverton.
Hi, Max.
And hello, Barry Glendenning.
Hello, Max. I've had a lovely time in your house, snooping around at half time.
I was slightly worried if this pod would be more about what's in my house than what happened. But I think most listeners are probably more interested in the fact that England are in the final of a major tournament for the first time since 1966. Before I chat to any of you, let's talk to Jonathan Wilson, who is at Wembley. And actually, I spoke to him literally a minute after the full-time whistle.
Oh, I thought Edwin were really excellent second half. And then in extra time, and the way they controlled second half extra time, I don't remember ever seeing anyone play like that.
The noise is amazing. What's it like there?
40,000 people, most of them fat middle-aged blokes, singing along to Tommy Pitman or Neil Diamond. And it's all seemed incredibly happy and jovial. It really wasn't as tense as I was expecting it to be.
And I mean, it is extraordinary to think that England are in a major final. You know, this is the first one since 1966, only the second one ever.
Yeah. I mean, a real privilege to have been there. And yeah, this is the first time I've seen England win in a tournament for 15 years. So I was wondering, is it me?
Well, listen, we'll let you go, Wilson. We'll let you get on with doing your writing duties, but thanks for coming on, mate.
Okay, cheers.
Jonathan Wilson there at Wembley. So, Marcus, how do you feel? This is uncharted territory for England fans. I don't know how I'm meant to feel. I was sort of expecting during that game this pod to be about glorious failure. How do you feel?
I'm really impressed. The boys have done the nation proud. It's pride, really, more than anything. I just think that's how I feel at the moment. We'll settle in and I'll be able to explain myself a little bit better.
I know what you mean. It's a weird position to be in. When you open the file in your head of glorious failure, there's so many things you can say, but to be on the eve of a major final doesn't feel real. Lars, as a Nordic man, are you okay?
I mean, listen, on the balance of, yeah, you probably did deserve it in the end, and you can't be too upset about that. You're a very good team, and yeah, the best team won in the end. I am upset about the nature of the goal. It's not a penalty.
I know we'll get to it,
but it isn't. But in fairness, Denmark didn't create a huge lull in this game, and England did, and you really, after about halfway through the second half, it always felt like Denmark, like England were going to do it. Denmark were starting to look a bit leggy, which I think we'll also get to. But yeah, no, you deserve to win this game.
Joe in Galway writes, by the way, the platform I listen to the pod on, Tops and Tails, the podcast, with a recruitment ad for the Irish Navy. If the worst happens on Sunday, Barry, what about that? And as an escape plan, how are you, Baz?
I'm okay. It has sunk in. I feel nauseous.
but like you said, Lars, we deserved that. We got this message from Ricky saying that passing to kill the game at the end of extra time was exquisite. I never thought England would see out a semi-final like that, Marcus. I mean, that you're watching it and we're 2-1 up. The crowd were oleing. I was like, it's too early to ole. But like, they could have done, and they did, because we did control that.
Yeah, we controlled it. I think we broke the Danish spirit in the end. I think it was a really confident end to the game. The keeping of the ball, moving it around, ran the Danish into the ground. They were already tired, and I think you could see the spirit drain away from them. I thought after Kane scored the penalty that we kind of sat back too deep and invited pressure. I think that's a mental thing. I think it happens for every team. I've been there myself, whereby you want to hold on to what you've got, whereby, but the best thing you to do is to actually attack. And eventually we kind of got through that little phase, that little mental block. And then once we got through that, the keeping of the ball, it was a really comfortable end to the game, which you don't expect in a semi-final of a major championship.
There have been so many questions asked about how good a football manager, or whether Gareth Southgate is a good football manager. And actually that move to take Grealish off, because, you know, subbing a substitute is like, it's like the ultimate crime for a football manager,
and subbing England's Rose currently,
exactly,
Jack Grealish, it's a big call. But my immediate reaction was like, whoa. But then you think about it, and to be fair, Marcus, you were the first one, or you actually, Max, were the first one to say that is exactly the right decision. And it is, because in that situation you didn't necessarily need Jack Grealish on the pitch. What you wanted to do was close out a one goal lead against a very tired opponent, a potentially dangerous but very tired opponent, and having going to a three at the back and bringing Trippier in made perfect sense. And again, it's brave management from Southgate. And I'm sure brave is not a word people will associate with taking out Grealish and putting on an extra right back, but it is brave because you're going against public opinion in a huge way, and you're risking a reaction from a player who maybe has a temperament, maybe not. I'm not casting any aspersions on his professionality here, but I'm sure he will have been a little bit disappointed. But he felt at that time that that's what the situation required, just as he felt that a move to a back three against Germany and dropping an attacking player was the right move. So in Southgate, England have a coach, finally, after many, many years, they have a coach who is more concerned with having the right shape, having the right group, having the right balance, getting the tactics right, than getting as many big names onto the field as possible. This has been a problem for England for so long, and I think whatever happens in the final, it's a complete triumph for Gareth Southgate this tournament.
I don't necessarily agree it was brave management. I've tremendous admiration for Gareth Southgate on a number of levels. I wasn't convinced he was a great football manager, but I am coming around to that way of thinking now. But I don't think it was a particularly brave decision. I think it was an unusual decision. And Marcus, as a former player, may be able to share more insight. But taking off Grealish seemed a good decision, if an unusual one. And we saw late in the game that Trippier was holding the ball in the corner where Grealish might have tried to beat a man, do a Gareth Bale and set up a goal and possibly set up a Danish counter-attack accidentally. But Grealish is a grown man and he knows the score, and if he's going to spit the dummy over something like that, well then that's not really Gareth Southgate's problem, it's Grealish's problem, I would argue.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but it's still a potentially unpopular decision. And it's a decision, if the Danes do score, you know, you look a bit daft in the end.
He wasn't taken off because he was playing badly.
No, it wasn't
a humiliation.
And I'd like to think everyone would be mature enough to accept that that's just a good decision was made at the time.
And I suppose what's interesting is, had he taken Sterling off, no one would have batted an eyelid because Sterling had played the whole game. Actually, I mean, we'll get on to individual performances. I mean, the fitness of Sterling to still be going in the 119th minute was pretty extraordinary. He was involved in one moment in the game, Raheem Sterling, that we should...
I was wondering about that enormous elephant in the corner of the living room.
Rich says, is diving okay if it's England? Theron says, will Sterling be competing in the 3-meter springboard or the 10-meter platform in Tokyo later this month? Marcus, I really wanted that to be a foul, and I think I'm the last one to still hold a tiny acorn in the forest of dives. It's a terrible analogy, but but I'm going with it. That there was enough contact there to say that is a penalty.
I think you're clutching a little bit there, Max. I think when in first viewing, full speed, it looked like a penalty. But as soon as I saw the second replay, I was like, that's a dive. And further replays for me show it's a dive. Listen, he was...
You should stop watching replays now, I think. It's only going to become more of a dive.
Exactly right, yeah. I think he anticipated contact. It didn't really come. He's then gone down, and then Jensen's come in and barged him when he's on his way down already. And for me, that's not a penalty. Listen, for all, England were the better team for about, you know, the whole of the second half for me, and the whole of the extra time. So they thoroughly deserved the win. But, you know, that's heartbreaking for the Danish. Not that I'm going to complain too much being an England man, but yeah, that was definitely not a foul.
Barry?
It was a dive, unquestionably. You don't care. The Danes will probably be quite upset, but they'll get over it. If an Irish player did it, I wouldn't care. If you know, the Thierry Henry handball, the famous one against Ireland, lots of people are still very upset about that. I wasn't upset about it at the time. I'm certainly not upset about it now, but these things happen in football. The one thing I would say in mitigation for Sterling is that Malley had got away with a little shove on him earlier in extra time. That should have been a penalty.
Was that in the same move? Or?
No, it was right at the start, I think, shortly after either... I think Harry Kane had a shot parried by Kasper Schmeichel early in the first half of extra time, and I think it was very soon after that. Or possibly in the build-up to that, maybe. Sterling was making his way into the penalty area, and Malley shoved him in the small of his back. It was a dive, like, no question, but he'll sleep tonight.
Very soundly, and yeah, I love him.
Yeah. And I mean,
look, but the one thing I would say is that, you know, the amount of mockery the Italians got the other night for shithousing their way through their game, their quarterfinal. There was a lot of very pompous English people. One of them on this podcast.
Yeah.
Hello, Simon Burton.
I hope you're having this sort of very important conversations with your son about cheating and how bad it is.
Put
that.
Out about the Italian behaviour. I'm a firm believer in karma, Max. What goes around comes around, and I really hope that the Italians get a big wrong decision against on Sunday.
If one team is winning with 10 minutes to go, there will be some shithousery. Lars.
Yeah, Nicky Bandini tweets, on the one hand, I'm delighted with the outcome. On the other, just wondering if everyone who were so appalled with Italy players exaggerating the contact the other night still feels the same way, which I think is a pertinent question. But I think those of us who've, you know, track the English game and have some sort of relationship with this country over a period of time know very well that when Harry Kane falls over for absolutely no reason to win a set piece late in the game, that is a player being experienced and clever, whereas when a foreigner does it, it is awful, dreadful cheating. That is just the way it goes, and we're kind of used to it by now.
Marcus?
Yeah, on that one, I think you make your own luck in football sometimes, and if we count the amount of times Sterling makes those driving entries into the box, the likelihood is you are going to get brought down at some time, or you're going to, you know, make the referee make a decision, and that's what he's done. I think he got his rewards for all his excellent tackling play. I think he was superb tonight.
Oh yeah, he was absolutely brilliant, Raheem Sterling, tonight. And from, you know, to still be doing it in the 119th, 120th minute is just, what, considering lot of people, he was not in the starting. I don't think he was in mine. I think I was starting with Foden and Grealish, and I love him.
Yeah, no,
it's only going to get worse, Barry. I'll just say that when you hear a little trickle, Barry's not pissing himself. That's wine, by the way. It's important to point out.
Not yet.
wine which I poured into your empty glass.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
But again, another point for Southgate, because I think it was not ridiculous to question Sterling's place in the team, given the sheer quality of the options, and given the fact that he had a bit of a, by his very, very high standards, a bit of a lean spell for City coming into this tournament. Like, that's, I mean, he's spoken about it. He says there were other reasons for why his performances for City were, he was less productive. But again, Southgate was very, very clear and said, this is my guy, and I'm sticking with him, and another big decision that he's been completely vindicated on. And really, I think my player of the tournament at this point, I mean, we don't know what happens in the final, but I think if we had to hand out that award now, for me, that's Sterling.
Yeah.
Just to wrap up the penalty thing,
yeah,
we are on this pod, I think, all big proponents of Paul Doyle's law, the idea that the penalties are a problem. The idea that any foul, no matter how innocuous, in the box, should be rewarded with a sort of 75-80% chance of a goal is just a flaw in the rules of the game as they are. It doesn't work.
I'm not sure I feel like that. I don't know why that is. I want to talk to you, Marcus, about as an England fan, as the other England fan in the room, as well as producer Ian, just the wait for that penalty. And then I know it was not a long time between Schmeichel saving it and Kane putting in the rebound, but God, I felt bereft in that in that millisecond. I was watching Kane going, Kane always goes the other side, yeah, like, and he always just rattles it in, and it was not a good penalty. Yeah. And I don't know how you felt, Marcus, from your heart, how you felt.
Well, I was deflated, but when that split second after Schmeichel made the save, that moment was just, yeah, gut-wrenching, horrible. Just fortunate it's come straight back to him, and he's not going to miss from there. It's Harry Kane. But yeah, that little split second, it was honestly a terrible feeling.
I don't know about you, but you had just about enough time to think about all the long articles about Schmeichel and all the TV features and radio features about how, you know, the son of the great man, himself a great man, stopped England's quest to bring it home. There was just about enough time to think all those thoughts, and then
it's worth bringing it up. He was
unbelievable,
absolutely brilliant tonight.
And kudos to the Schmeichel wall face paint man. There was a man who the TV producers kept focusing, or several times. There was a man from Denmark who had, I think, the most elaborate bit of football face paint I ever saw. He seemed to have like a brick wall on his forehead, and then an arrow up towards it, and just the word Schmeichel, so as to suggest that today Schmeichel will be like a brick wall, which is a needlessly elaborate bit of face paint, but then totally vindicated by events in the game, because he was amazing.
He had a brilliant game. I mean,
I find people who do the face paint thing sinister.
Sinister?
Yeah.
Sinister.
That's just weird.
Did you think the Schmeichel face paint man was sinister?
I didn't see Schmeichel face paint, man, but just the face paint in general. Whatever about putting a little flag on, you know, your cheek or something, but to go full face paint is...
I think I've done it before.
Very weird.
Of course. As a young man,
I've done full face paint.
Right.
But is that okay?
I find wearing replica shirts if you're over the age of 12 quite sinister. So okay. Unless you're actually
playing on the team.
Not
sinister in
terms
of, like, you're going to be a murderer, or... Oh, okay.
I wouldn't rule it out.
Can we talk about...
Have you seen quite a lot of England fans who wear a replica shirt?
I don't think the Schmeichel face paint man is off on a sort of murderous rampage around London right this
unlikely.
Minute.
Can we talk about Harry Kane? I just thought, Marcus, that was his best performance of the tournament. I thought he was absolutely on it. His touch was in. After Denmark scored, he played two through balls, and one led to the goal, one led to Sterling and that brilliant save, but he was brilliant tonight.
Yeah, that was definitely his best performance of the tournament. I thought it was very reminiscent of a Harry Kane at Tottenham, dropping into pockets, getting the ball on a half turn, sliding people in, drawing fouls. He was a constant threat today. And listen, when he plays like that, he's exceptional. He's our talisman. He's a leader, and you can feel. He gives everybody else a lift in the team. It definitely does. I thought that was a really great performance.
I thought at the start of the tournament, Spurs might manage to hold on to him. I feel less confident now.
His contract hasn't gotten any shorter over the tournament,
okay,
so I think
that's
completely fine. I thought it was interesting how...
Well, technically it has.
Fair enough, Barry. Fair enough.
Sorry. If my pedantry annoys you.
It's a fair point well made, though it doesn't dramatically alter his circumstances.
It's getting shorter as we speak.
It's 3 years, Harry. Go to work. You have a job. No one forced you to sign the contract.
He was great. Mick says, anyone else think Kyle Walker has been outstanding? Bracket 78 minutes gone. Plenty of time for an own goal.
I have in my very detailed and scientific notes from the game, from the first half, I've written Kyle Walker, very good. And then at some point in the second half, I wrote, Walker's recovery speed, Jesus. And I think that's kind of where I am with Walker. He's always been freakish, like athletic, like his ability to get back. And earlier in his career, a lot of the time he was compensating for some slightly iffy positioning. But he's become a much more mature player, and he makes a lot fewer mistakes, and he still has that pace. I mean, he's so good.
And on the other side, Marcus, Luke Shaw is incredible. Like I know Roberto Carlos gave him some kudos this week, which was nice for him.
What did he say?
I don't know. I think he did some clapping emojis to a post that Luke Shaw did. But that's enough, isn't it, these days? But I thought he was magnificent. And do you know what's really interesting? was before the first game against Croatia. I was on the radio when the team was sort of leaked and Trippier was left back. And I was on air with Darren Bent and Perry Groves. And they were both making the point, you're picking Trippier at left back. What message does that send to Shaw and Chilwell about how you rate them? And I thought it was quite a sensible point. They were saying, you know, their left back's going, I'm a left back and you're not picking one. This could destroy them for the tournament, etc. And that has flagrantly not happened. You know, like, that was a specific thing and it worked. But Luke Shaw has been so good.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. And on that point, I think Southgate's man management has clearly been excellent as well. And whatever he's doing behind the scenes to keep everyone motivated, the way he's brought people in, taking people out. Shaw's came in, replaced Trippier, and he's been outstanding. I think that the link up between him and Sterling down that left hand side is brilliant. I think you see Sterling comes inside, you know, he knows Shaw's going to be on the outside. Sterling's willing to stay on the ball, wait for Shaw to get on the overlap, you know, and then he'll slide him in. I think that's really our main attacking threat down that left hand side, and Shaw's been playing a massive part in that. His delivery's been excellent from set pieces, from open play. You know, he's looks like the Luke Shaw of old. He's been brilliant.
Can I ask Max, actually, because I mentioned this before the game,
yeah,
and we were talking about squad players, and I said I thought I would be the world's greatest squad player because I would quite happily not play. I'd be happy to sit in the bench because I'm not on the pitch. I can't make a mistake, and I think I'd be good crack around the camp. Wouldn't be spitting the dummy because I'm not getting picked.
I did suggest you might lead someone astray. Suddenly, Tyrone Mings is shit faced.
You thought I'd bring Tyrone Mings to the pub, sneak him out to the pub for a booze up. I don't think I would. I probably would, actually, because you get very bored. Marcus, if you're a fringe player in a squad, and this is probably why you were a professional footballer and I wasn't, apart from the fact that I was useless, were you happy enough to just be, I'm on the bench, I'm not that bothered. I'm still kind of involved. If we win, I get a medal. I'm on the bus.
No, I think you want to play. I think, you know, the likes of Jadon Sancho, who hasn't played as many minutes as he'd probably like, would be desperate to play. I suppose he'd probably knock on Southgate's door and ask, you know, what do I need to do to get into that team? Which I think he's well within his rights to do. I don't think there's certain players there that will know that, you know, other players are much better than them and they are going to be just in the squad and not going to get games.
We're talking about Connor Cody here.
You're talking about Connor Cody, yeah, probably. I think even someone like Tyrone Mings, I think when everyone's fit, he knows that he's a squad player. He's not better than any of the other three in there, and I think he accepts that, but he's going to be ready to step in if someone gets injured. And I think that's the mentality these players have.
And actually, on that note, you saw with Phil Foden today, you know, he's not got as many minutes as I think a lot of people thought he would. He played the first game, didn't he? He was rested because he had a booking and he struggled to get back in. And I thought, although it was a cameo, I thought he looked so good. And we know he's a brilliant footballer, right? And he won't start in the final, almost certainly. But he looked absolutely brilliant tonight.
Yeah, exactly. And plus, he's very young. So, listen, he understands, you know, that when you're a little bit younger, you understand that your role is sometimes it might be a little bit different. And you're right, I think when he came on, he really impacted the game in a positive way. Looked super sharp.
I would argue, actually, the younger you are, the more likely you are to get annoyed that you're not being selected. And that the older you are, you're going, nah.
I don't know, maybe I think it's like
I know the score.
I think it's like a normal distribution, right? So when you're really young, you think, I've got loads of tournaments. When you're 35, you think, I'm just happy for the ride. And then there's a sort of bit in the middle when you're in your mid-20s, late 20s, where you think, this is my peak, and I'm not in this team. That would be a problem. That's how I would
maybe you're right.
What do you think, in terms of Barry being a squad player?
Yeah.
I think I have your icon here is Tommaso Berni, who was the backup goalkeeper at Inter from 2014 to 2020 and made no appearances. Before that he spent a year at Torino where he also made no appearances. So he was a professional goalkeeper from 2013 to 2020, making a total of zero appearances.
Wow.
And he was released at the end of this season, sadly for Bernie. Hopefully he'll land somewhere. Maybe he wants some game time.
I would have enough ego to want people to know who I am.
But I mean, he's got quite a lot of followers on Instagram. He seems to go on holiday quite a few places with his very glamorous looking wife. So, you know, it's not a bad life.
Look, we're going to end part one right now. And in part two, we're going to just spend more time talking about England getting to the final of a major tournament. Back in a sec. Right, this is part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. We've got a live show, everybody, on the 12th of August. Another Zoom one ahead of the Premier League season. £7 a ticket, 7:30 p.m. Me, Barry, a couple of others once we've worked out who we want on the Zoom.
Who we can get,
that's true. The Premier League season starts on the 13th of August. For fans across the world and in different time zones, or those who simply can't join in the night, the event will also be recorded. A link to the video emailed to all ticket holders. Basically, we're banking on Barry telling a story so disgusting that we sell more tickets afterwards than we sell before because people just want to know what the story is.
I think that approach worked the last time.
Yeah.
I will struggle to come up with something more
vile. I have time to work on life experiences.
Anyway, find out more at theguardian.com/guardianlive. Question before we talk about Denmark a bit. Was that a good game of football, Barry? Because I was too invested. I think we chatted in the second half when it felt like really pulsating. We'd had that brilliant semi-final yesterday between two sides just pinging the ball out beautifully. And I obviously wanted the England game to be as good as that for some reason. I don't know why. But I was too invested to know if that was good.
I thought it was a terrific game, yeah. Look, I was also invested in it. Not to quite the extent you were, but I did say out loud, I think, with 7 minutes to go, oh, I could go another 30 minutes of this. And, you know, I've been on the go since 8 o'clock this morning.
That's working, not drinking, but
working,
you know.
Yes, working. Working. I was on Tour de France duty and they had an early start. Double Mont Ventoux, for anyone who wants to read up on it. First time in tour history. I thought it was a terrific game. I didn't think it was... The quality was as high as it was between Spain and Italy. But as a game of football, it was, yeah, a ding-dong battle. Is it a cliche to say it was like a classic cup tie or something?
I don't think so. I mean, I'll
be watching a game and I'll be dreading extra time and I'll just go straight to pens. I was looking forward to another 30 minutes of that. And... when England scored and they started dropping deep, I was going, ooh, they're dropping deep. And I asked Marcus, you know, when a team drops deep like this, and they clearly shouldn't be doing that, are you aware of the fact that you're doing that, but you just can't stop? And he said, yeah, that's... And it's just terror.
You also started filming me every time Denmark got a corner. or a throw-in in the opposition
half. I think you more than got your revenge at full time.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. We should talk about Denmark, Lars. They really scared England. They pose a threat and they seem to be able to play the ball through the lines,
yeah.
which you imagine Italy will be able to do as well.
So you mentioned it was a good game, because I thought that as well. And I actually thought Denmark had done really well. And then I was kind of surprised after the game to check. They only had 7 shots, of which I think like 6 were outside the box. Which isn't great. And even like the XG, I don't want to bring it down to that, but the XG was not good. And I think maybe it was a case of Denmark getting the ball into quite a lot of promising positions. And then, because I remember the sat here. This is the Nordic bias coming out, Max. But I felt like I sat here a lot of the evening thinking, oh, this looks good for Denmark. Mm. You know, they're in a good place here. Like, this could turn into something. And I came away from the game thinking they'd done really quite well and created quite a lot. Whereas the cool, unfeeling facts of the matter would suggest that they didn't actually create that much. But I felt like they bothered England. The way they were playing through the midfield, I thought was a little bit worrying for England. I mean, it was a lot to do with Damsgaard taking up really clever positions and making sort of passing triangles possible by moving around. And I do felt when he went off... I think they were tiring, but when he went off, they lost a lot in possession. But yeah, they played through England with an ease, which would concern me a little bit with regards to the fact they were playing Italy next.
Marcus?
I thought it was first half, I agree completely with Lars. I thought that was the case. But I thought it was a dominant performance for like the second half and majority of extra time. I thought it was pretty one-sided. And as Lars attested to, I think their stats kind of back that up. I think England made the adjustments they needed. I think Denmark tired a little bit, and it was just ended up being a one-sided contest for much of that second half. So again, got credit goes to Southgate and the players.
So a good friend of the show, Elliot Ross, tweeted, and this was before England took the lead in extra time, Denmark looking increasingly knackered after their trip to Baku will probably be the difference between the teams tonight. UEFA's primary job is to maintain integrity of the competition, and they aren't even pretending to try anymore. That's a bit strong from Elliot, but...
He makes a really good point.
I think I'm not... I've not made a big deal about the fact that some teams have had fans, others haven't. It's the pandemic, like, we have to just make the rules, whatever. But I think the travel and the extraordinary difference in how much some teams have had to travel is an issue. And I think any games being played in Baku in this tournament was nonsense and should be flagged up as such for the reasons of what that regime is, for the fact that it's geographically a nonsensical place to have games in this sort of tournament when everyone's moving around. And it's not even a very good stadium. They couldn't even fill it anywhere close. Like, there was no interest. Like, it was nonsense.
Although it did lead to a great question on TalkSport when Jamie O'Hara was asked, what country is Baku the capital of? And he said his guess was Afghanistan.
Jeez. Wow. That would be even more inappropriate. Though you wouldn't put it past UEFA, though, if there was a kindly dictator with deep pockets who sort of, you know.
Clive Tilsey, Ali McCoyster in Kabul. For Slovakia.
And a bit of a trek going here. Slovakia versus North Macedonia in Kabul for the group stage. Not sure why we're doing here.
They'd bring it to life, though, yeah. Wouldn't they?
I would argue, Lars, Denmark had three home games in the group stages.
It's a fair point.
The teams who had all home games in the group stages got to the semi-final. Look, this was a Platini vanity project, which was a bad idea before we'd ever heard of COVID, and it was an even worse idea after we'd heard of it. But England have home advantage for the final now, and sure, nothing can go wrong now, Max.
Stop it. I've got 2 days to... How long have I got now to stress my life away?
How do you feel, Max? This has never happened to you before in your lifetime.
The thing is, I don't know.
Are you scared yet?
I'm not scared
yet. Are you enjoying the semi-final, or have you moved on to terror for what might happen in the final? If you lose the final, would you, in hindsight, rather have lost the semi-final?
No, I think getting to a final is really huge for us. And I think it's really huge, and I think it's like another step in what Southgate has managed to do. Like, getting to the semi-final, even though the run in 2018, I know, was not a difficult run, was a really big moment. I think what's fascinating is you see how different the squad is now to how it was then. And I think that, I got really...
If you get to two more finals,
yeah,
you'll be as good as the Czech Republic.
So we are coming from a base that's lower than it should be. And I just think it's really important for these...
We've won one.
True, okay. Yeah. But for these, I'm trying to make a serious point. I have to go on Today in Focus to make serious points. I can't do it.
I heard you on that. Yeah. Et tu, Max.
Did I? I put on my grown-up voice. Did you like it?
Yeah, you name-check me. You ridicule me. You go on other podcasts and you ridicule me and you hope I won't hear them.
Barry, I hear all of them. I quite often ridicule you in front of your face.
No, but that's fine.
Okay, right.
It's ridiculing me behind my back on Big Boy Podcast.
Oh, okay.
That's what I don't like.
Anyway, the question is, would I rather go out now or go in the final? I think getting to the final is such a great achievement. It's not like, oh, we're there, so whatever happens, it's just a bonus. It's not that at all. But getting there is so huge for the squad, that sounds stupid to say for the country, but just to be in a final. I've never been in one. I'm 42. Never been in one. And we're a country that are big enough that should be in one. It doesn't mean we should win them. There are lots of brilliant teams. There are lots of brilliant footballers in brilliant countries. Lots of countries play football. But for us to get there, to be at a stage where at the World Cup, every team will be like, we want to avoid that team. It increases your chances of doing well further on, I think.
And will your heart burst with pride on Sunday night when the Italian anthem rings out, that glorious Italian anthem that everyone loves, and tens of thousands of your fellow England fans in Wembley just drown it out with booze.
No, I'll
how be, proud will I, you be?
I will
Max?
Be embarrassed, and I'd like to, if I had the time, to go to up to every one of them and explain why they shouldn't do that and change their mind, I would do it. But given the amount of campaigning I did for Remain on social media, I suggest it wouldn't work.
Can we talk about that wonderful Danish free kick?
Yes, yes.
England, because I think it was actually good for England to go behind, because they hadn't before in any point in the tournament. It was the first major setback they suffered. What a free kick that was. From the boy Damsgaard, as I presume we're obliged to call him.
And I'm a huge fan
Martin,
of
Martin Damsgaard.
I'm sort of such a fan of this observation that I'm going to steal it and attribute it to you from across the table. You called that Damsgaard looks both really young and really old at the same time. Yeah. And after you said that, every time he was in focus, I was like, he really does, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got... If he doesn't have a hair transplant when he turns up at West Ham...
But I feel like he shouldn't. I would respect him so much more if he didn't have a hair transplant.
He was a wonderful player. It was a wonderful free kick. Interestingly, Marcus, at half-time, the pundits on ITV were suggesting that Pickford was at fault, but I don't buy that.
Yeah, I think it's very harsh. I thought it was fantastically struck. I think it starts, you know, a good foot over the bar, dips down. I think he's unsighted, maybe. I think, obviously, with the Danish players, it's a some sort of set-piece routine they've got in terms of they formed an additional wall. I think he saw it late, and I think he was well-beaten in the end, and I think it's very harsh. Listen, he's a top keeper, so he'll be looking at himself and thinking, what could I have done better? But yeah, it's not one of those, I think, where you blame the keeper. I think it's excellent technique.
I think, and I could be wrong, I think the TV pundits here in Blighty missed the fact the Danes formed a little three-man wall of their own, and then as soon as Damsgaard shaped to run up to take the kick, they all shuffled as one across in a move that was clearly pre-choreographed to block Pickford's line of vision. And I thought it went in the top corner, and then I saw the replay and it went in the middle. He got a finger to it, but I don't know. I would say it would be harsh to blame him.
Yeah, no, I thought it was all about the dip, really, to that shot. And I think, again, if you look at the goal he scored against Russia, it had a very strange curve. It went really high and then came straight down again. I don't know enough about the striking of a football to know how you do that. Maybe you know, Marcus. I don't know how many Wickham... I don't know how many Wickham fans... Do we have a lot of Wickham fans listening who maybe don't... I mean, you haven't done that a lot.
No,
I've
definitely
know.
Never done that. But what it is, I think it's a technique that came in, but not too... probably 6, 7, 8 years ago, I think it was... First person I really saw do it probably was Ronaldo, in terms of the way you open up your fit and you hit it with like the instep, and you kind of, you know, that's what generates the dip. So it's an actual technique that players do use, and it seems to me like he's mastered it, because that was a fine strike.
From time to time during this tournament, we've seen players get a yellow card. Harry Maguire in this game, reasonably early, playing on a yellow in a big game. Is it constantly on your mind? Does it factor into your tackle-making decisions?
Yeah, for me as a player, I was half the player I was when I picked up a yellow. I think, especially in midfield, being a combative midfielder, it takes away so much from your game. And you're always on edge. You can't make any sort of challenge. You can't play your normal game. And I really felt that really affected me as a player when I picked up an early yellow.
Barry, it's kind of like on the pod, you can go for certain jokes because you know if it doesn't work or if it turns out to be completely inappropriate, we can edit it out. Whereas on the radio, it's not as good. So being on the yellow card is a bit like being on the radio, whereas before that you're on the pod.
So like on the radio, Barry answers every question I ask him. On the pod, I ask Barry a question and he says... That's a stupid question. Looks at me like
that.
I've
would very much be
family.
A red card on the radio. So it's the second yellow you can.
But the Germany game, Rice and Phillips were both on a yellow card. Rice from very early. As a manager, we were talking earlier about Southgate's bravery. If my combative central midfielder got booked after 8 minutes, I would be inclined to take him off after 9 minutes.
Yeah.
You've got to know your players as a manager. There are players that, even if they're on a yellow, then they have the know-of-all and the nous to get away with it, and it's not going to impact. And there's others where they just, you know, you can't trust them. So I think if every player picked up a yellow card, you subbed them straight off, you'd be in, you know, big trouble as a manager. So yeah, it's about just knowing your players, I think.
And I do think this is a slightly wider point to do with Southgate and this team. Having gone in slightly two-footed on the hypocrisy thing earlier, I want to say, I don't think English people are actually as sort of arrogant and entitled about their football team as they're made out to be a lot of the time. I don't think this period of time we've had before this tournament and before Southgate, where England have just always failed, people were expecting England to win the tournaments. What I think people got very upset about was that players who you saw play really well from their club teams would join up with England and go to a tournament, and suddenly you had like the Iceland game where suddenly Wayne Rooney couldn't trap a ball and Harry Kane kept kicking the ball out of the field for no reason and stuff. It was just something that happened at England. They became something else and something less than themselves. And from the outside, it's impossible to know exactly the answer to this. But Southgate and the management team and the FA and the people around England have done something to make them feel differently. Some of it is to do with the players themselves, I'm sure, and the character they have. But this team goes into games and they don't get the sort of tournament jitters. They don't shrink. They don't disappear. They don't panic. And I was waiting for the moment when they actually come under a bit of pressure because they concede first in a big game, and we didn't see it today. So whatever happens in this tournament, like Max was saying earlier, it's a win for England because we've had a tournament where England, these players have looked like the players we know they can be, and this has looked like the team we know it can be, and that is terrific.
If they lose the final, I don't know, 3-1, mm-hmm. will you still think they've done well?
Yeah, brilliant tournament to get to a final. We haven't done it since 66. Like it's precedented, but it's almost.
So if we give you a 2-1 defeat now, would you take it?
No. Right, that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll answer some of your questions. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Questions from people on social media. Jamie, will you and Barry kick on through the night? Barry?
I doubt it. I've heard you say before how much you dislike having visitors, having to go and meet people in restaurants, or having overnight guests. I know you have a spare room.
Grant says, how am I supposed to sleep tonight? Daniel says, I'm English. I live in Basel in northern Switzerland. How am I going to possibly perform for a 9 a.m. meeting tomorrow? Yes, indeed. He says, have you been a good host?
Marcus. I would say so,
Marcus?
I think you've been a very good host, yeah. Thanks, Max.
Have I treated them to a good old celebratory chair slap?
Not yet.
No, but if England win, should we recreate that scene in a Wetherspoons? We probably should.
Well, I can get you a pub.
Okay, well, no shit. Who knew of all the fixers of in all the world, the one thing that Barry could get me? Wow.
I can get you a pub with a 340 from Chepstow on a TV screen in the background. A stew. All you need is the duds.
And the hot pants.
The hot pants and the stew.
It's just finding pubs in London is really hard. It's like, where would we be without this sort of...
Mark says, can Barry tell us just how self-indulgent the inside of your bathroom toilet is? Are we talking NAF awards and photos everywhere?
Yes, exactly that. And your wife's degree. So yeah. You've got Max branded Dolmio, Max branded Pringles, comedy photos of Max. In your big boy bathroom, you've got a Brian Blessed autograph with Gordon's alive, exclamation mark.
So he came on Soccer AM.
Except it doesn't have an exclamation mark, and that made me sad.
Well, he came on Soccer AM, and I noted how many times he yelled, Gordon's alive, during it, and then I got him to sign at the end. I'm quite pleased with that. How much would Barry, says Ben, pay from his own bank account for England not to win the Euros?
I discussed this with Barca Jim and Sean Ingle in the last 48 hours.
Does Ingle not want us to win?
No.
What does Ingle support?
Well, he's Irish.
Okay.
I think I'd go $2,000.
Mr. Sleepy says, how much does England owe to that pint of wine, Lars? It's really interesting. That moment in the sort of history of English football is actually fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, because all the things we've spoken about, how Southgate has managed to break this circle of sort of psychological terror. And I don't want to go on about this, but it maybe it's to do with the timing of me sort of entering this industry as we foolishly call it, and writing about England. I feel like I spent half of my professional life writing about England's sort of psychological hang-ups to do with tournaments and all the things they were doing to stop that, and it just never worked. Where suddenly, you know, whatever goes right or wrong in the final, at least this team, the players look like themselves. They look like the version of themselves that we recognize, and we don't have... I don't think they're afflicted by the thing. I remember Gary Neville wrote a column in, I think, The Telegraph about it, where he said, you know, when we concede a goal, in my head on the pitch, I'm thinking about what the papers are going to write about us tomorrow. And I'm sure that was true for a while for some of these players, but that is a terrible mentality to have on the pitch. And you're never going to achieve anything when you're thinking like that. I do not think a single player on the England team spent a millisecond worrying about what the papers would say if they went out when Denmark scored. Like, you've completely broken that sort of angst, and they're now showing who they are as footballers on the field in these tournaments. Maybe Big Sam could have affected that change. Maybe it's just that this is a generation that's mentally stronger than what came before, and they've grown up in the sort of multimedia world, and they're coping with it better. All of these are possible answers. But at least Southgate is the one that has been there when it's happened, and he deserves so much credit for it.
Lars, thanks for coming.
Thanks, Max.
Marcus, thank you so much.
Cheers, Max.
Barry, thank you.
I hope you get bet out the gate on Sunday.
We'll be back on Friday morning for a preview of the final. Did you know that, Barry? I think you are, yeah. Anyway, we'll be back on Friday to preview the final, and then we'll be back on Sunday after the final of the European Championships 2020 between England and Italy. England. Ugh. England in the final. God. Back on Friday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.